Good evening, everyone. Can you please take a seat? We're about to start. Welcome, everyone, this evening to our Workplace Management and the Workplace Management Framework event. First, I want to thank Meadows for hosting this event for us. It's a really nice space, and I also want to thank all the members that are attending. I just want also to remind everyone about our app. If you haven't downloaded it, you should. I want to mention some upcoming events as well. We also have the IFMA Cares, Fifth Avenue, St. Jude's Children Research Hospital Hour fundraiser on March 6th. It is a really happening event, so if you guys want to have fun and mingle and have cocktails for a great cause, please join us. So let's go on with the event. I'd like to introduce Chris Mott, who will also speak before the speaker does. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. How's it going, everyone? My name is Christopher Mott. I am the co-chair of the Education Committee. I'd like to thank you all for coming out. And in particular, I'd like to thank Andrew Mawson for coming out. He is the founder of the Advanced Workplace Associates. And not to give him a thanks just for coming out, but he also had to cross the pond to get here. So without further ado, Andrew Mawson. And before I let Andrew go, I just want to let everyone know, next week for all the attendees, we'll be sending out the PowerPoint presentation, the model that Andrew goes over tonight, and Andrew's contact information. So, Andrew.
Thank you. Good evening, and it's lovely to be here. Thanks for the invitation. I just want to let you know that in about 20 minutes' time, I'll be nodding off, because for me, it's nearly 1 o'clock in the morning. So if I start to go a little bit, you know, a little bit hazy or fuzzy, you know, you'll understand what's going on. So I'm going to try and make this as lively as I can. A little bit about me first. Just so as you know, I'm not an architect. That's the first thing you need to know about me. I'm a Manchester United fan, so this presumably some of you hate me, some of you love me. And I started out life in the world of quality management a long time ago and got into logistics and then strategic marketing. I got involved in a program on intelligent buildings about 30 years ago, which brought me into the wacky world of the workplace. And in 1992, I, with a couple of other guys, set up a company which is called Advanced Workplace Associates. And fundamentally, what we set out then was what we now do, really, which was to help organizations see a different future in terms of their workplace and the way they work, get a stronger linkage to the business strategy, but then help them to make that change happen. So really, workplace strategy, change management, and increasingly designing workplace experiences and thinking through how all the various different things that touch the human in the workplace come together to create an experience that is memorable, productive, and effective. So that's kind of those are my prejudices. I don't sort of fit neatly into any particular box, but I have run reasonably large organizational units within the IT industry as well. So I kind of cover a number of bases. So tonight what I want to do, with your permission, is talk a little bit about what I would call workplace management. And in particular, a thing called the Workplace Management Framework, which some of you may have stumbled across. But I want to explain a little bit of what that's about, how you can use it, and what it's for, really. So let's just start with a few. So help me a little bit. How many of you are in the business of running workplaces as opposed to supplying products and things? Okay. And my assumption is that the rest of you are providing products and things. Is that fair enough? So we're about 50-50 then. Good. So equal hate will come from both communities. So let me start off by talking a bit about it. So we know work is an important thing, isn't it? It's something that, you know, if you think about the number of people on the planet, there's something about 4.5 billion people go to work each day in one form or another. And, you know, we spend an awful lot of time in the workplace. And the workplace can be a fun place for us. It can be a painful place. It can be an exciting place and a place where we're enthused in the way we do things, or it can be a grind. Everything gets in the way. Stuff doesn't work. Every time I go in a meeting room, I have to crawl under the table to plug my laptop in. Every time I walk into a meeting room and I want to cast things onto the screen, I have to call somebody from IT. So my dream is a frictionless workplace experience that helps me recruit the right people, retain the right people, help people to be really effective in what they do, support communities connecting, increase the number of friends that we've got in the workplace. And this is, based upon our research, probably the best way you'll get the most out of your human capital, if you want to use that horrible, horrible term. So, first off, let's get a few things on the table. Let's just get a few definitions on the table, because I think this is really important. Our industry, however you define it, is fraught with misunderstandings, which are mostly about lack of clarity around definitions, I think. So, first thing is the workplace. So, for me, the workplace is not just the physical. You know, it's not the desks and the, you know, all that stuff. It's, for me, it's the coming together of the physical, the technological. So the degree to, you know, my daily technology. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Talking of technology. It's got a mind of its own, this thing. The tools that I use at work and the technology that surrounds me. And the final part of it is the culture and the social environment. And when I talk about frictionless, I mean frictionless in relation to all three of those things. So I get on well with my colleagues, I'm respected, we enjoy coming to work, the experience that we have is frictionless, everything is knitted together and thought through very carefully, and nothing gets in the way of me doing my best work. Nothing consumes one moment of my brain's cognitive energy in the course of what I'm doing, right? The perfection. Now, I'm sure lots of you have got that already, haven't you? But it's interesting because the more you look at the way we go about designing and delivering workplaces, the more you realize that it's never going to happen because everybody's doing their little bit and mostly in a vacuum. So, I mean, you know, we'll have a brief for the workplace, but actually then everybody goes away and does their stuff. And this is why I think you end up with meeting rooms. The meeting room ends up being the epitome of the mismatch between all these different things. You find that the power's not in the right place. You find the network won't connect as you would wish it to. Your laptop won't talk to things you want it to. And you also find, actually, one of the other pet gripes is that meeting rooms have almost always got square tables in them, which absolutely never help with eye contact, which is really important in terms of sort of social coaching. So, you know, when you look at all the different bits here, you can kind of see that the meeting room actually is kind of the epitome of how the workplace is designed and actually delivered today. So for me, it's about the physical, information, social environment where tasks of work are performed. Are we all right with that? Yeah. Can I get your signatures on a piece of paper that just confirm that? But it's interesting because I stumble across people in the UK that think workplace is a new discipline. Well, it isn't. It's the stuff we consume every day, you know. So for me, workplace management is about the management of all that stuff. So it's the management of all the resources needed to maximize human productivity through the design and maintenance of appropriate, effective, and economical workplace experiences that align to the strategic business objectives. Now, this is an interesting area because I often see that there is no alignment between the workplace experience and what the business is trying to do. You know, and increasingly, I think we should be thinking about the workplace experience as a resource. You know, it's an important resource that impacts upon everybody's minds and thoughts and emotions and functions every day, right? So it's the totality of the whole thing. So thinking about what is our business doing, what does our workplace experience need to achieve is, for me, quite an important part. And the biggest question that we often ask our clients on projects, even if we get involved in them halfway through, is what are we actually trying to achieve here? You know, how do we want our world to be once this thing has happened? What behaviors would we like to see? What would we not like to see? How can we use this as a business tool that will help us to project our organization forward in a very effective way? And the final thing, and it, you can probably just about see it here, is the workplace is no longer a building, I'm afraid. You know, the workplace is as much, people's homes, coffee shops, whatever. And the interface between the human and the organization needs to be as good. Let me do that. It needs to be as good when we're working away as it is when we're working. Now, the interesting thing for me is, and again, you go back to the meeting room. If you're in a meeting where there are 10 people in a meeting room and you're one of the people who are working away, if you're using Zoom or whatever it is that you use, you are at a definite competitive disadvantage when you're not in the room, aren't you? And again, one of my dreams, and I think it's coming reasonably quickly because the technologies are around there now to enable you to do it, is to make the experience that people have remotely as good as the experience you have in the room. Because otherwise, you know, misunderstandings happen, confusion reigns, all sorts of things go wrong. So the workplace, the management of the workplace is no longer about the building for me. It's about the totality of the information, you know, the information environment, social environment and space. But it's not just about the building. It's about think about the digital workplace, which actually is kind of, you know, completely separate, if you like, in a sense, from the physical. Think about the workplace as a container for people working in the digital workplace world, in a way. So it's a little bit crazy, really. It's the jet lag kicking in, I'm quite sure of it. So that's workplace management. Everybody on board with that?
Yep.
Do we love it? Is this a great thing for us to have?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the interesting thing is that, you know, a number of years ago, mostly out of frustration, actually, I and my colleague, Dr. Graham Jervis, who's one of the founders of our business, Graham wrote a book, and it was called Moving On from FM to Workplace Management. And in it had this little model, which had 10 different management capabilities in it, which really sort of started to set out what this thing, workplace management, might look like. And so frustrated were we with the industry that we decided to pull together a little working group to create a thing, to try and define what good looked like, right? And what came out of this was a 54-page document called the Workplace Management Framework, which has now been adopted by IFMA. And if you want to get a copy of it, it's on the IFMA website. I'm sure you can all see that. That'll be on the slides when you get them. But basically what it does, it sets out what workplace management is, and it sets out a number of capabilities that you can start to understand linked together. So these are the things that are in it. It's not rocket science, but it's got a lot of things that are very, very common sense. I'm going to go through a few of them. But the idea is that you can go through your organization and you can start to understand how well you're doing on each one of these things. And it's not the answer. It gives you a kind of a framework for thinking, if you like. And the important part of it is this, really, the first of all, the strategic management bit. So if, with your permission, if you're still awake with me, I'm going to wade through these things. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Good. Thank you. Okay, the first... The first thing to... No, I've no doubt you can see all the first bits. All this is really saying is that that framework that I showed you a second ago looks like these are individual and discrete management capabilities. But the reality is that they're all very, very much connected. And so this diagram is really just saying, look, you know, there are linkages between all of these things, which I hope you'll pick up as we go through. So we are at the moment looking at creating training modules around each one of these 10 capabilities. And of course, each one of them has to refer across to other ones because they all kind of link. Anyway, so the first one, as I mentioned, is strategic management, which is really concerned with the innovative alignment of workplace assets and services with the core purpose of the organisation and the creation of the mechanisms by which workplace and services are effectively and economically designed and delivered on a day-to-day basis. So that's it. That's simple, isn't it? Straightforward. So what does that really mean? Well, the answer to the question is, these are the sorts of questions that I think you should be asking yourself within this part of the model. So the strategic management part of this is actually saying, what is our business trying to achieve? And how can we orchestrate all of our workplace assets and workplace experiences to help us to achieve that? What is the deep thinking? So these are the sorts of questions. What's our business strategy? Where are we going with our products and services? What kind of people might we be wanting to recruit might be another question, which isn't down here. But how can the way we work and the way we design and manage our workplaces support it? What kind of workplace experience, second by second, sense by sense, do we need? It's very interesting. I see a lot of companies trying to do Google-type things at the moment. You know, sort of the obligatory pool table and whatever, and slide and things like that. This is not about copying everybody else. This is about working out what your very specific, very unique workplace experience needs to be in order to satisfy the needs of your particular business. And not just in the short term, because as we know, workplace experiences need to evolve. And one of the things, just taking a slight detour for a second, one of the things that we found when we were doing research around designing consumer experiences was that a wow consumer experience is only wow for a short period of time. So you have to think at the beginning of the process about what new chunks of wow are you systematically going to introduce into your workplace experience as you go by, you know. So what kind of workplace experience do we need in order to be successful? I mean, let's talk about workplace experience for a minute. What do you think a workplace experience is? How would you define an experience, what do you think? It's all very well, isn't it, when you have to talk, yeah? What do you think? What would you say an experience is?
Information exchange.
Okay. In what respect?
Well, I mean, that's what you're there to do.
Okay.
Communicate.
When you walked in through the lift lobby and came up, you would, as you walked through the door, you saw white. You probably didn't realize it, but you actually smelt the place as well. You heard stuff. Yeah. And your brain, whether you like it or not, is picking up messages about this environment, you know, from the moment you're kind of moving through the game. So an experience for me is the totality of what you saw on the wall, the artwork, you saw the slides coming in, and you see the white, it sends some messages to you, you hear stuff, you know, or you don't, and that sends messages as well. So all of these things are what you can play with in order to consciously construct an experience. Just as if you were in a theme park or a theatre. Theatre is a very good example, actually, isn't it? If you think about a theatre, you know, you go into a relatively darkened place, there's a stage that people are on, and by the use of light, colour, words, sound, it changes your mood, doesn't it? You know, I always find it's ridiculous. I don't know these people at all. I've been in their company for about an hour and I'm crying. How does that work? So it's about constructing experiences, like we would design a theme park almost, thinking about things holistically. What are the things that could drive growth and reduction in our space? We need to be thinking at the outset, how can we grow this business and how can we shrink it? If we go into a downturn, how can we decommit from space, because it's expensive. We want our cost base to ride with our revenue. And then how much flexibility do we need to ride the volatility of the market? How much flexibility do we need to reconfigure, reorganize, reset our organization? And increasingly that, I think, is an important part of the game. So these are the sorts of questions that I think you'd be kind of asking yourself in the strategic management part of the model. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
And it's only really when you've gone through a thought process which is all about this sort of stuff, can you then move on to the next phase, which is about creating the workplace and then managing it. See what I mean? So we're trying to get that alignment, in a sense. Now, an experience for me, I mean, this is just picking up really what we just said. You know, it's an event or an occurrence which is leaves an impression. So we want it to leave the impression we want to leave, not the one that just happens by chance. It's generated by individual senses as well as delivering functional value, triggers emotional responses. So there's an emotional component to this as well. It's sensory, multisensory. And then finally, you know, every individual is different, interestingly. You know, we all grew up differently. Our DNA is a little bit different. Most of it's the same, actually, but, you know, we're a little bit different. We grew up differently. We have different sensitivities. So we have to recognize also that when people are coming into a workplace, they experience things differently. So how many of you at the moment are feeling warm? Yeah. How many of you are very just comfortable? Yeah, so this is a very good example of what we're talking about, you know. And so, you know, people have been trying for years to create an air conditioning system that would follow you and give you, but it's just impossible. So the smartest move is to let people know what the conditions are in various different parts of the building and let them choose. So it's like a different approach. Anyway, so that's one experience is. And then really thinking about, you know, if you're going to design an experience, what are the things you'd need to be thinking about? Well, you'd need to think about what is the functionality that I want to try and achieve in the workplace. What is our organization's personality? Now, personality, I think, is a little different to brand. Personality is really the reality of who you are. And organizations have personalities just in the same way that people have personalities. And so the idea is if you can articulate that, and there are some techniques you can use for doing it, then you can start to transfer that into the workplace experience. What kind of culture and what kind of behaviours do we want to see in our workplace? And how do we go about creating the space so that it encourages people to do things which are going to be good for them and good for us? What are our competitors doing? Because in the end, this workplace has to be attractive. And if our competitors are doing different stuff, and when I talk about competitors in this context, I don't necessarily mean the companies you compete with. I mean the companies that you're competing with for labour, which is subtly different. And so what is it that those people are doing? What can we do in our experience that's different? What are the business drivers that we're trying to bring into our thinking? And how can we use the best productivity science? How can we use the science to help guide what we do in our workplace experience? And then finally, of course, I think in today's world, everything that we do needs to be designed for rapid change. So how do we create not only agile working, activity-based working, but how do we create spaces that can be changed quite quickly and easily at low cost? So these, I think, are all the things you'd be thinking about in that part of the model. Make some sense? So we move on, I think, from here to the next item on the, as we've moved into the centre of the model, is client relationship management. And here, the sort of questions that we really want to be talking about, who are our clients and consumers? Because increasingly, I think what we have to do is think about the people who use our buildings as consumers, real consumers, in the same way that Apple would consider somebody who bought one of their products. Now, that's actually kind of an interesting thing, because once you start thinking about the workplace, the consumer in the workplace, you have to start thinking about where the homogeneous groups of different needs are. And you have to start thinking about how you can conjure up and create services and spaces and technology, whatever, that will make those people be delighted, that they will love your workplace experience. Just as some people love products, right? So it's the idea of bringing love into the workplace in a way that you might never have thought about before. So what are the needs of these? And the other distinction I want to say is we talk about clients and consumers. Well, we see clients as being the leaders, the people who pay the bills, and the consumers being the people who are actually consuming the experience all the time. But what are their needs? how do we segment them in the way we would if we were doing this as a marketing exercise? How do we maintain a respectful dialogue? Because what we want to try and do is understand what's going on in the business on a continuous basis, and having the intelligence in one place that helps us to manage those relationships better. So those are the sorts of things I think you'd be looking at in the client relationship management piece. Make sense? Anything else you can think of that we might have missed? So then you move on to performance management, which is, you know, and this is not just sort of gratuitous measurements that are thrown up because they just happen to be easy to conjure up, which is what often happens, I think. This is about creating a suite of measurements that help you understand how well you're doing against your strategy. How well is the workplace experience performing? How well is the workplace performing in doing the things that we set out to do in the first place? And have we got the right measurements in place to help us with the diagnostics? Okay. And then we move on to project management. Well, this is a bit more kind of, you know, this is sort of safe ground, really, isn't it? But the only difference here is that I think, you know, you're thinking about, you know, what is our project load? What skills do we need? What processes and approach do we need, particularly when we might be dealing with projects which are not just physical? You know, again, part of the workplace management idea is that it transcends disciplines, departmental disciplines. So we have to start to work to bring everybody together to work on this idea together. Make sense? So then we get on to supply chain management. I'm not going to dwell on that, really, because I think that, again, that's a reasonably well-trodden path. But the measurements needed in this area, I think, need to flow back to the original strategy that has been developed, as opposed to, I mean, quite literally, I've seen contracts and arrangements with suppliers that, you know, they're able to report on things which make not one jot of difference. You wouldn't be able to tell how well the experience was from the measurements. Capacity management. Now, this is an interesting one. This is about understanding what is the true capacity of our workplaces. Now, what do you think governs the capacity of a workplace? Well, capacity, the degree to which this thing can accommodate a certain amount of work, yeah. So it's interesting because we often work with clients who don't know the answer to this question. So for me, I mean, you could find that there is a better way to lay the space out and get more desks in if you wanted. But, you know, you run across problems with your building services. You run across problems with your fire evacuation. You don't have the right number of toilets and things. So understanding what is the capacity of your space. And then really, what is the capacity of space when you start to apply different models of working? Because when you've got a one-to-one relationship between desks and humans, then life's easy, isn't it? But when you start to move more into a sort of an activity-based free address model, you know, you can often get more than, you know, maybe, you know, nearly 1.5 times as many people working out of the same space, as long as you don't over, you know, burst the banks on your capacity. So what is it and how much of it is consumed? Because again, not many companies know really how well their workplaces are really being used, in a sense. And you know, the use of sensors and things like that coming down the track really helps enormously to manage proactively the supply and demand. So how can we increase capacity? So those are the sorts of things that I'd be looking at in this particular part of the model. And then resource management, well, this is really thinking about other resources like energy and waste and resources perhaps in your restaurants and all those sorts of things to make sure that you've got the right balance in the process. And then this thing we've called improvement management, which is really about how do we monitor how well the experience is going. Where do people go to report the problems and challenges that they face? And how do we fix them quickly? A lot of organizations are very good at fixing problems, but not actually ever so good at capturing systematically what those problems are and the root cause, if you like, from them. So these are the sort of things that you might want to be looking at there. So This is just and risk management again is a, you know, this is going back to what are the critical functions of the business, what are the risks, what are the consequences of risks, and how do we, what is our approach to risk, and what are the processes for reviewing these and evaluating them. Change management, well, this is, you know, dear to my heart, but this is about, a lot of this is about how do we use the workplace transition to change culture and behavior. So this is bringing the behavioral part into the equation as well, and different skills, really. What is our process? So now that you're experts on the workplace management framework, what do you think, how could we use it? What do you think we could use it for? Sorry? Right. Yeah. So that's an interesting one because it's one I hadn't thought about actually. But client education, giving people a framework to see how things can all link together, is an interesting one actually. Anybody else? Employee retention. Okay. So by creating the right workplaces. And you are managing them well, that helps to you. Yeah, okay, the implementation. How else could we use it, do you think?
I think this would be also a framework internally.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it gives you a sort of unifying picture, doesn't it? It shows that we're all working on the same team in a way. Anything else, Tim? Okay, so that people know where they sit in the...
Well, no, between the M&M and IT and
okay.
All the other departments of the organization.
Yeah.
So that they can work towards, like you said, the same
company. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? So, like I say, workplace management is no longer about physical space. So in order to... And I'm not necessarily advocating that suddenly, you know, we have one individual... who is responsible for IT, real estate, facilities, and HR, although that would be a delightful world to exist within. But what I think we can do is to, you know, people from any one of those disciplines can take the lead in trying to coordinate the activities of each of those disciplines in order to try and achieve an objective, which is, you know, comes through this process. Any other, you were going
to
say something? Yeah.
To change the way we're looking at
it. Yeah. So you can use it as a model for the way you set up your organization. And you can sort of, you can start to, you know, at least have a common view about where you're all trying to get to, which I think is the real power. Anything else?
That you've... I heard someone say something about retention, but what about just attracting the employees?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not going to come work for us if we don't have all the bells and whistles.
Yeah.
And if we don't have the bells and whistles, they'll take
their brains somewhere else.
So not just retaining them, you actually have to attract them.
Yeah. But I think the thing, what I would say is, though, that you've got very special bells and whistles.
Yes, we do.
Yes. And those are the things that need to come through in the experience, as opposed to just general bells and whistles,
yeah,
if you see
that.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. But
you could see a space race here going on in terms of, you know, one company trying to outdo the other in terms of the experience,
and you know you can sort of see how that could work. You know? Yeah. I think the way to evaluate this is by going back to your original objectives and to create measurements that help you to understand how well you're doing. So those can be surveys or they can be sort of
digital information from utilization data or whatever. But I think everything has to go back to those original objectives. I mean things like, you know, if you're keen to retain people, and you can look at retention rates, recruitment rates, you can look at the way those employees who chose not to sign up for you felt about the experience, and whether these things were linked. So there's a lot you can do to try and understand whether you're achieving your ends, your objectives. But it all goes back to that first piece of work, really. Anything else? Any others? How else can we use? Yeah.
It's a way to prove value against cash flow. With the finance department, you use this volume of data to prove your value. Because we spend money, right?
Yeah. But that's absolutely spot on, isn't it? Because when we've gone through this process to get this clarity of the strategy, that process needs to bring the leaders of the business in. And if those guys sign up to a particular kind of workplace experience in a particular model, then we know if it's done this way, it has value. So when somebody says, oh, we're going to do some value engineering on this, and we're going to take this out and that out and the other thing, then you've got a God-given right to say, well, actually, you realize that we're losing this bit of value and that bit of value. At the moment, that conversation never happens because nobody's really thought through, from a business strategy standpoint, what that experience needs to be. Yeah. Well, I think it's hugely important. I mean, and everybody will say, well, senior leaders are very difficult to get hold of and so on. But if you're turning this into some strategic weapon, those business leaders, in my experience, are often very energized by doing this. You know, they're often not interested in buildings, but they certainly are very interested in the workplace experience. So I think that has to be, a kind of co-creation process. And I think it's a great thing because suddenly it gives people running facilities and real estate today moving towards this model, it gives them a new platform. It gives them a new basis for, you know, engaging. So the workplace is no longer just about keeping the lights on. This is actually strategically important to businesses to help them be successful. Sorry, you were saying... Yeah. Well, I think, again, it goes back to what are you trying to achieve? I mean, if you're trying to bring about a change of behavior, you're trying to introduce new models of working, all those sorts of things, that has to be going on in parallel with this. It all has to be thought about together, basically. And that's a really important part of the process. We see lots of projects where the architects have gone wild and come up with fantastic places, and maybe there's some fancy technology, but nobody's told the people that actually things are different now. And they certainly haven't got inside of the brains of each of those people to help them understand why they should change. So a lot of projects we're getting involved in are kind of where people have done what we would call first generation, you know, activity-based working, and realize that they forgot the people along the way, which is a bit crazy, really. But it is a symptom of a very functionally orientated view of the world. You know, we're the real estate people, we're the IT people. IT people increasingly putting in interesting tools and stuff, but not thinking about how you get people to adopt them, how organizations can themselves reshape themselves. You know, so it's all the human side of it that needs to be thought through. Anything else?
A lot, too. Like, a lot of times they're coming up with all this, just a ticketing system. You know, they hand it over, like, this is a new ticketing system, and we're testing it out, and it's not really doing what we think we needed to do.
Right. Yeah.
A lot of times you get a ticket and half the stuff. It's like, I don't even need this. And you're missing the things that I really need to make my
Yeah. So you were going to say something? Yeah.
That when an employee leaves, and there's always churn in a company, is that they leave at least with a good impression. Maybe they're leaving because they have another quicker, better opportunity at a competitor's or a fellow colleague's firms. But they're at least leaving with the impression that the firm was comparable to other firms.
Yeah.
Because one bad glass door review.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
Appeal to their senses from beginning, start, and end. No one is staying here five, 4 years anymore. It's 2 years and then moving on. But how they leave and word of mouth is critical.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, because the other thing about it is that people come back again, don't they?
Yeah, I've experienced that.
Yeah.
Not myself, but
yeah, because actually sometimes the grass isn't greener on the other side, is it? You know, so I agree. I think, good companies are thinking about how they, bring people in, the experience they give, but also the way they deal with it.
The only thing they want to change is that they come back and they say, the carpet is still the same. So,
okay, so let me bore you with this slide for a minute. What are the uses? So a vehicle is presenting the industry to business leaders as a professional business relevant function. Consistent language for communication. So within the document, there's lots of clarity so that we have different disciplines can talk to each other in a kind of consistent way. As a tool for communicating requirements, as a yardstick against which to measure, a framework within which to develop organizational management competences. You can build your organization around those 10 capabilities. And to pick up the point that I think has been made a couple of times, as a framework that enables unification of goals and objectives between CRE, FM, HR, IT, and risk and security functions.
Can I ask about that part?
Yeah.
That's the part that we've been discussing a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, quite a bit actually. I think the trick is to do work with the senior leaders in the first instance, and to get real clarity about their priorities and what their vision is. Because armed with that, you then have something when you sit down with these various different parties and you bring them together in an open spirit. You say, look, this is what the organization is trying to achieve. Now we need to work together to work out how we do that. And I think it puts you in a different place. I think there's also something about creating a kind of team, which is goes across, and creating a safe environment, which could mean as simple as taking people out for beers, just getting comfortable with people, so that you're comfortable with each other. Because the other thing I've learned over the years is the languages are different. The drivers for each of these disciplines is different. IT very often are mostly interested in keeping things moving. Anything that creates, risk around their ability to do that, can often be the thing that they get upset about. And of course, some of the things we're talking about might not be in their, in their focus. So finding some unifying vision, which is signed up to by the leadership, first of all, I think is the way to do it. But then really working, trying to build a team, get friends working together. It's good, this isn't it? It's going without me. I get it. So anyway, what I was going to show you was the tool itself. So there is actually this online tool. And it's at this wmframework.com. You can go and sign up to it if you want. But basically, it goes through, here are each one of those 10, each one of those areas. So strategic management has these different elements in it. And you can go through a process, really, of answering a series of questions. And off the back of those questions, you then start to get you get some results. So if I can do this. Hold on a minute. I think this screen has shrunk my laptop. So no, it's not going to. I'll tell you what, I've got some slides here instead. No, we're good. So this is the tool. There's like some slides of the tool I did earlier. But you go through a series of questions and it asks you for a response. You put the response in, and there are questions and stuff for every one of those 10 capabilities and the sub capabilities underneath them. And then what you're able to do is you're able to put weightings on them. So some organizations might find that certain of these 10 things are more important than others, depending on their business. And then what you're able to do then is to get some pictures that show where you are against each one of these capabilities. And this one is showing, it's not a completed one, but it's showing, you get a spider diagram showing where you are. And then this one is kind of the reverse, which is based upon your weightings and basically says these are the areas you need to put some energy into. And you can use this as a tool for starting to build your own organization around this. And it doesn't require huge numbers of consultant days. You can download this you can use this. It's about £10 a month on today's valuation of the pound. But the way that we would typically see this being used is a leadership team could, for instance, each go and work with each other to answer these questions, and then the leadership team has a workshop, go through all this, understand why we are where we are, and decide what to do and how to go forward.
Can you zoom in on this a little bit?
I can a little bit, I think. We'll send you a link to the website as well. It's like a balanced scorecard. Yeah, it's very much like a balanced scorecard, focused just on those capabilities. And within each one of them, you also get a breakdown of how you perform on each one of the sub capabilities as well. So you can begin to dig a bit deeper into it. So I think, from my standpoint, the other thing that I think is happening, just to sort of round things off, I don't know whether you're seeing it here, but we're seeing in the UK, we're beginning to see the role of chief workplace officer and chief experience officer, which is sitting at quite a high level in the business. And it's somebody who's been given the power to coordinate all the various different things in order to get people the best they can be, kind of thing. Give them the best experience. And I think this is where it goes, actually.
What
yeah. The ones that I've seen have come from the real estate and facility side, but they're usually people who've gone out of that discipline
and come back.
Or they've gone and done an MBA in something different. Or they're people who've got experience across different parts of the business, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. It's more of an influencing role. So you still have your IT, your real estate, whatever, but you have somebody who sits above it all, who's kind of interested in the totality, and has the power to coordinate and bring people together. That's the way it works. Yeah. I mean, I think it's an interesting question. I mean, I could imagine a world not too far away where organizations are actually quite secretive about what they've done in their workplaces. Now, today, most organizations have done something very clever and very effective, are very keen to promote what they've done. But, you know, I could foresee a world where actually people keep some of that back, you know, because they want to stay ahead of the game. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the thing that I think that's really important is that you don't think about the workplace experience design as a one-off. I mean, you have to think about this is going to move forward. So we need to make, you might even hold some things back. You know, you need to be constantly thinking about how can we introduce the next wow, if you like. Don't throw all the goodies in right at the start. Hold them back. You know, have a program of goodie delivery, if you like. You know, sweetie delivery, seems to me. Yeah. We're finding that when we get to talk to people at the top end of the business, they're all over this. Yeah, because it's directly linked to what their core business is about. They start to get it. And in fact, we found very often that actually the people at the top get it better than the people who have hired us, in a sense. So I think on that note, it's probably a good idea for me to stop. I am about to fall asleep, as you probably gathered. But you can see this is the framework. It's there. We created it not for some massive commercial gain, but for the good of all, and that's why we've made it free. If we're promoting it, and we're going to start to do some online training around each one of these things as well, in due course. So, thank you for your time and your energy and your ideas and stuff, and putting up with my Mancunian English accent. And hope we'll see you again at some point. Thank you. If there are any more questions, I'll be happy to. Oh, there is one. Okay. The top selling point for leadership is really about, today it depends what business you're in, but I would say it is probably around recruitment, retention, and productivity. That's what we say. The other one, the other universal one, every chief executive I've ever spoken to, primary driver, we want to knock down the silo barriers between each one of our divisions. And that's universally the case.
And a follow-up question to that, I guess, the flip side, the transition from leadership to management, what would the selling point is, we knock down silos,
yeah.
But the transition of understanding what that means in order to get there, and what does that look like? Because it looks like one thing for people.
Yeah. It varies. I mean, some leaders are very reticent about, change and stuff. But usually, if you've got somebody at the helm who's kind of got the vision, got the idea, you can get enough airtime with the rest of them to get there. I mean, I think the thing is that traditionally in the world of real estate, the metrics have mostly been economical. And what we now need are some experience metrics to balance those. Because it's just utilization as well, but I see that as mostly an economic driver. I mean, a lot of the projects we've done in the UK have been driven by the desire to get more people in the same buildings. Now, interestingly, the pendulum is swinging back, and people are saying, actually, our people are the biggest cost. They're the people, they're the guys who create the value in the business. We need to make sure we give them all the stuff they need. That's not taking your foot off the utilization pedal, but what it is doing is focusing on the things that they need in order to be effective. And I think you can do the two things together. That's the way I would say it. Yeah. Well, I think it's possible for people to do it internally, but it's often a lot easier if you're external because you're not implicated in the politics. You know, I mean, you know, big companies are a bit awkward, aren't they? You can say the wrong thing to the wrong person and your career can be in tatters in a minute. Whereas if you're a consultant, you're expected to be a little bit challenging and, you know, and actually if you lose one client, well, there's plenty more. There's plenty more where that came from. No, I didn't say that. So, but yes, I mean, it helps to be outside of the power structure, I think, sometimes.
And is it a long-term relationship, or is it sort of, you create a framework for a client, and then you can sort of give it to them?
I think it's always got to be... I think it's always got to be... If you take this and you were to do this... I think sometimes you might need a bit of help at the beginning, but I think it has to be owned by the workplace management function. They need to take it forward. But it is useful, I think, once in a while to go back to this and have somebody independent look at it, you know, once in a while. But in the main, we're not, you know, I think it's something you use yourself. Anything else? You're obviously not that interested in getting back at the wine, are you? No? Good. Okay, well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate
pleasure,
your time.
Pleasure.
All right, everybody. Again, look out for your email next week. We're going to include the PowerPoint presentation, a link to the IFMA research article that he did, his contact information, and a web link to the actual maturity model that he showed you. If you have any other questions, Marita is the local contact for AWA, and I'm sure that she can help you as well. I'll make sure I send you her contact information also. So thank you very much for coming, everybody. And thanks again to Meadows for having us tonight.